From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Gunrunner reaching for the wire. Collectives alongside. And then comes West Coast and War Story. The Gunrunner's on top of the world. He wins the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Arrogate is getting going late now. Collected is in front. Arrogate closing on the outside. It's a Bob Baffert 1-2, but Collected going to win it. Collected and Martin Garcia won the Pacific Classic.
Originating from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum.
But Arrogate swoops up on the outside. America's King Croesus of horse racing went to the front. 200 meters left to go. Arrogate has drawn away from Gunrunner.
Always Dreaming with a 2.5 length lead and 16th to go. Looking at Lee is second. Then comes Battle of Midway Classic Empire. They're coming to the line. And the dream comes true. Always Dreaming has won the Kentucky Derby.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. Welcome to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, and the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld. Happy to have you with us on this chilly Saturday morning in the heart of horse country in the bluegrass right here in Lexington, Kentucky. And the road to the Kentucky Derby really starting to heat up now, and it will continue to do so over the next 112 days. As a matter of fact, 112 days, 6 hours, 54 minutes, and 14 seconds away from the Run for the Roses. And now that the formalities are done, JT, with the countdown, we can begin the show.
You've even got the Big A doing it now.
Oh,
I have
no.
to listen to it like every time I'm on the air.
He's stealing my shtick?
He's stealing your shtick. Yes, definitely.
Inexcusable.
Well, you know, I guess people want to know.
I can call him out later this morning on this show because he's going to be with us to talk about the races at Aqueduct.
Are there going to be races at Aqueduct?
I don't. Yeah, that's a great question. We'll have to find out.
It's a little dicey. Andy Serling apologized for having people handicap the card and stuff and then canceling the races. But, you know, I don't know what else they can do. I mean, if the tracks, there were several tracks that the racing was canceled due to unsafe conditions. And, you know, I know Andy wants the horses to be safe just like everybody else. It is a little disconcerting. Like he said, it's his job to handicap. So,
right.
You know, but it's tough. It's tough on people. You know, I'm always very careful about the weather. I put a Pope Jude sheet out for Saturday. And, you know, it's one of those things where the three tracks that I used are all supposed to have good weather.
Yep.
So, that's why I did it. Ordinarily, this time of year, I don't do much, but Fairgrounds has such a great card. And
really good card.
There's good racing at Gulfstream, and of course, Santa Anita should be okay too. So I was able to cobble together some good races, but it's tough this time of year, and you just have to be patient. And I think a lot of times it's best if the races, you know, come off the turf to just pass and wait for a better day. Better days are coming. We've got some great racing, you know, from this weekend on. It's going to be very exciting. Looking forward to Pegasus in a couple of weeks. And
2 weeks away from Pegasus. How about that?
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's always a good card. And, you know, so we'll do the best we can. But I think Saturday is going to be a really good day. We also have Monday racing this week.
Yep.
At Oaklawn Park and few other racetracks, holiday racing.
Yeah, and because of the weather, and I know a lot of the racetracks are calling audibles, we called an audible for you this morning here on the Equine Forum as well. In the interest of full disclosure, recording this program on Friday morning. So if the news has already come out, obviously as people are listening to this now on Saturday morning, if the news has come out that Aqueduct has canceled, then, you know, obviously what we talk about here today might not necessarily pertain to the racing this Saturday, but you know, the Jerome is going to be run at some point.
Eventually.
Yeah.
It's already been canceled once.
And Firenze Fire is going to make his 3-year-old debut at some point.
Yeah.
And he's an exciting horse, isn't he?
Yeah, he's good. He's on the list. He can run some.
Yeah.
You know, this race is going to adjust his position, no doubt, in the rankings, which is, it's always cool this time of year because The horses go up and down depending on what they do.
Yep.
Fantastic allowance race at Gulfstream yesterday. Mississippi and what was the other horse? The horse that won the race. I've got it right here.
Yeah. That's the cool thing about this time of year. Now that the two-year-olds have now turned three and we're starting to focus on the Kentucky Derby, as you're watching races, the Derby winner may not be racing in a stakes race just yet. You mentioned the allowance race. Look, you could see a really high-level allowance race with a really good field. That race could be the one that produces the Kentucky Derby horse, not necessarily one of the stakes races we're talking about this weekend.
Yeah, the other horse was Noble Indy, trained by Todd Pletcher in Mississippi, trained by Mark Cassie. And, those two horses hooked up at the top of the lane, went head-and-head down the lane with Noble Indy getting a narrow victory. But two, very expensive, highly thought-of horses. And I don't do this very often, but I wanted to see that race. I set an alarm on my phone so I wouldn't miss it because, I get busy and things happen.
Yeah, you do.
But I got to watch it, and that was an exciting race, and those two horses look like they have ability. So it's a great time of year, to keep your eye on the three-year-olds, and right now I have 45 on my list, so we'll have to see where they all end up.
Yeah, and it's always fun to see the way this whole thing comes together. And one of the questions that we typically throw out as a poll question on this show, we won't do it here today because I think it's a little bit early, but as we get deeper into the three-year-old campaigns and into the Road to the Derby season, is which area, which region of the country, a lot like the NCAA basketball tournament, which region of the country has the strongest contingent of Kentucky Derby contenders? Is it the West with California and or is it the Southeast would say Gulfstream or maybe even Fairgrounds if you lump that into there? Or is it the Northeast with Aqueduct and the horses taking the New York Trail? Which area of the country, the Midwest, where does the Derby winner come from? And at this point, it's kind of early to tell. It looks like McKenzie last week looked really, really good, right?
Yeah, he was sharp. He's obviously got tons of talent, and
he's still learning, though, right?
Yeah,
doesn't he strike you as a horse that's still learning?
He's a little sharper than most, I think. They put the blinkers on him. They took them off. What did they do? They take them off or they put them on? They took them off.
They took them off,
and so he could see more.
Yeah.
Obviously, that helped him. He got a ridiculous Equibase speed figure.
Yep.
How
about the effort from Mask down in Florida?
Mask looked really good. He's another one. He's a very solid colt, and he'll get properly placed by Chad Brown, who's not a huge Derby guy, but might be if he has the right horse.
He's a Preakness guy. All he does is train Preakness winners now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he would like to win the Derby like everybody else, but he's another one. I mean, I think it's a really deep crew right now. If everybody stays in one piece, I think there's a lot of horses that show potential and can get the distance. And
there's another discussion we can have as we move throughout the show, the quality of the three-year-olds this year. And look, I always say you can't judge it until they start making their way through the Triple Crown campaign and then facing older horses later in the year. But at this point, early on, it looks like there are a lot of really good three-year-olds, right? I mean,
yeah.
it's a very good crop at
yeah.
this point.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You're right about that, too. Like a horse that really, I think, drove that point home was IRAP. IRAP
yeah.
was just kind of like hanging around in the fringes, and why is Doug running this horse and this and that? And then, from the Toyota Bluegrass on, he became one of the best three-year-olds in the country. And Lord knows if he hadn't gotten hurt where he would have ended up.
Right.
But, it's one of those things where you don't want to go too crazy too early. And I changed my opinions of the three-year-olds all during the year. And it was that kind of year anyway, where horses would come to the fore and be good for a little bit of time and then fall off. And nobody really made a big comeback,
yeah.
I don't think, that I can think of off the top of my head. But,
West Coast got really good.
West Coast got good at the end.
Really good, yeah.
Yeah. You know, Always Dreaming was good early on.
Yep. You know, yeah, it was that kind of year.
Yeah.
Right? It was that kind of year. He kind of dominated the headlines early on, and then we had three separate winners of the Triple Crown races, and then here comes West Coast to really dominate the three-year-old division in the second half of the season.
Right. Yeah, it was an interesting year.
All right, so there are three Derby points races coming up today and one on Monday. You have two today, you have one on Monday. That's the Jerome at Aqueduct. Again, if racing is being held at Aqueduct later today, you have the LeCompte at the Fairgrounds. No reason to think that racing won't be held at the Fairgrounds. It's going to be okay there. And then the Smarty Jones Stakes at Oaklawn coming up on Monday. Each of those awarding the winner 10 points for the victory, 4 for second, 2 for third, and 1 point if you finish fourth in those races. So we're going to talk about those races as we move throughout the 2 hours here this morning. Joe Christofek is the handicapper at Churchill Downs. He also handicaps and does all the TV coverage at the Fairgrounds. We're going to talk to Joe coming up after our first commercial break in just about 5 or 6 minutes from right now. The Big A, Anthony Stabile, who you hear every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday on our Express Bet radio show and our BristNet call-in show, and of course, the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts. He hosts all of those programs during the week for you here on the network. And Anthony is based in New York, and he is going to join us right around 9 o'clock Eastern this morning to fill us in on what's happening with everything at Aqueduct and talk a little bit more about that Jerome Stakes. And then Buff Bradley going to be with us toward the end of the program. Now, Buff, you know him as the trainer of, well, Brass Hat, for example, and the great Groupie Doll, who was a multiple champion sprinter filly. Well, Groupie Doll, of course, retired, sold to Mandy Pope, was bred to Tappet, and produced a colt as her very first foal by the name of Tappability. Tappability is making his debut later today at the Fairgrounds, and we'll talk to Buff about that coming up later in the program. That should be a lot of fun and a really neat thing to talk about here on the show today. We'll get to our first break. We will come back, and it's Joe Christofek from the Fairgrounds who kicks it off right here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Have you been looking for high-quality, consistent, and palatable hay, along with a company that offers personal service and attention? Well, your search is over. Washington Hay Company has been feeding your dream for more than 25 years with only the highest quality hay. Their three-tie red, white, and blue string certifies their hay is grown in Washington State's Ellensburg Valley. And with delivery to Keeneland, Churchill Downs, and farms in central Kentucky, Washington Hay Company is feeding your dream. Call Brad Green at 859-588-5480.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
I'm speaking with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, can you explain how the claims process works? Knock on wood, I haven't experienced a claim recently and hope I never will, but what happens?
Well, Mike, after we are notified by the insured of an accident or event, we will submit a claim report to the company, giving basic details of the claim. A claims representative will then contact the insured to walk them through the claim settlement process. Most claims are settled promptly, efficiently, and to the complete satisfaction of the insured.
Well, that sounds fair.
Basically, the insured is buying an insurance policy, which is a promise to pay in the event of a covered claim. It also provides peace of mind absent of a claim. That's the way it works.
Thanks, Joe. For all your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Hi, this is Steve Buttleman, the official bugler at Churchill Downs in the Kentucky Derby, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Three quarters in, 1 minute, 13.48 seconds. The son of Tappet with all the money on. It's Principe Guilherme, and he is fleeing the scene, coming down toward the final 16th. Private Dye toward the inside, battles United Patriot and Dark Templar. But close to home, it's Principe Guilherme. Principe Guilherme with a big, easy win, 1 by 10. Private Eye on the wire for second for Dark Templar. United Patriot finished fourth from WW, Kieran, and Backstage Boy was last of the seventh.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRRN. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios, and happy to have you back with us on a very chilly day for much of the country. Hopefully not the case at the fairgrounds in Louisiana, where we find Joe Christofek to talk about the outstanding card. Six stakes races on the Saturday program, including that LeCompte Stakes, which will indeed feature Principe Guilherme, who, you just heard John Dooley with the call, remained perfect with a huge allowance win at the fairgrounds on December 16th. And boy, has he been good. One of several horses sent to the post in that race this afternoon for Steve Asmussen. And Joe, first of all, good morning. And wow, what a program at the fairgrounds on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, good morning, Mike and Jude. And relatively speaking, it's cold here too, but cold for the people of New Orleans is 45 degrees. So we've had a lot of rain the last couple of days. It's cleared out. We're going to have, you know, sunny skies, but cooler temperatures today, and like you said, just a jam-packed card, six stakes races out of the 13, and, you know, highlighted by the LeCompte and the Silver Bullet Day is we are well on our way to the Kentucky Derby and the Kentucky Oaks.
Joe, how lucky are you? You get to handicap at Churchill Downs and handicap races like the Kentucky Derby and the Kentucky Oaks and all the other graded stakes, and then you go to the fairgrounds this winter, and now you're looking at races like this and cards like this. You're a lucky man, my friend.
Yeah, this is my first season here, and normally this time of year I'm on a beach somewhere, like watching races on my phone or something, because this is usually my downtime. But I got the call. Brian W. Spencer was actually my protege in Chicago. He has the job here and at Arlington, and he's, you know, like, I'm giving my notice. I'm going to recommend you. You know, this is a chunk of time of my year where I'm available, and we worked it out, and I came down here, and it's been great, man. I mean, the track, the racing, the people, the food. I mean, you can't give a strong enough endorsement to New Orleans and the people and the culture and everything here.
I'll give you a strong endorsement. I might give up the Caribbean for New Orleans. And that doesn't happen very often, but I'll tell you what, there's something about going to New Orleans, staying at the Hotel Monteleone, and you know, the you're right, the food is great, the people are awesome. It's a tremendous experience, and I have to say I'm a little envious of you. I'd love to spend a meeting at fairgrounds. I've always liked the track there and the turf racing, and it's a really good meet, and it keeps getting better.
Yeah, I mean, especially when we can put stakes programs like this together. I mean, this day, the Risen Star, the Louisiana Derby, it's just a really nice, natural progression and spacing of the races and spacing of the stakes and the build-up and everything. And we've got, you know, really familiar with the horsemen and the jockeys, the vast majority of them. You know, a lot of them race at Churchill and in Kentucky, so it's made my transition a lot easier. And yeah, Jude, you're right on, man. It's a lot of fun.
Jude, do you remember the time we were there and we were there to cover the Louisiana Derby, and we went out to a restaurant. I can't remember which one that it was. Maybe Commander's Palace. I think that was it. And Robbie Alvarado came walking in right behind us, and we were waiting for our table. And Robbie was trying to sell me on getting the turtle soup.
Right.
Now, obviously, he doesn't know me very well, right? I mean, I'm not eating turtle, man. Even in the soup form, I'm not doing it.
Yeah, it's a turtle
caging
soup.
Guys.
It's funny you said
great.
That. I was out with Marcus Roosh and Ed DeRosa last night, and they both ordered the turtle soup. I'm with you guys, man. I took a pass.
Yeah, Ed'll try anything. That guy needs to go on Fear Factor. He'll try anything. Joe, let's talk about the program today. Let's start with the LeCompte because that is the big one. I want to spend most of the time talking about that race. But look, this three-year-old crop, Jude and I were talking about at the top of the show, it appears to have a lot of very talented runners in it, and I think we're going to see a couple of those in the LeCompte later today.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? I mean, all over the country, we're just seeing the horses pop up. Baffert seems like he's loaded this year. Chad Brown's got two really good ones. Pletcher's a little bit. I mean, he had a nice horse win at Gulfstream the other day. You never know when, you know, he's going to pop horses out of the ground. I agree. I mean, I think this has the potential to be a really good crop. Steve Asmussen's got Principe Guillerme. And, you know, he's been great so far. He's won for fun. I'm a little bit concerned. He's been on the wrong lead. He was on the wrong lead in the stretch in his first race, and then he switched back to the left lead in the stretch in the most recent race. He's got to get over that in order to really take the next step forward. But, I mean, just looking at this race, I mean, he should win. He'd take just a slight step forward. You know, Instilled Regard is really good, and he's proven. He took a big jump forward in the Los Alamitos Futurity last out. So Lamini, McKenzie, who since come back and won even, you know, more impressively. On paper, at least, it looks like the winner should come from those two, but Larry Jones has got three in there. You know, and this is the time of year where horses step up seemingly out of nowhere and assert themselves and prove themselves to be worthy of the Triple Crown Trail.
Yeah, it only takes one race to put them in a different dimension, and that can come at any time. And people look at a race afterwards and say, well, you know, this horse's speed figures were terrible until he ran today. And that's what makes three-year-old racing so much fun, trying to figure out who's going to develop, who's going to run their best race today, or a race they've never run before. And if you can find those, you get paid handsomely.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple under-the-radar horses. I mean, Zing Zang is 15-1 in the program, looked really good breaking his maiden at Fairgrounds last time. Steve Asmussen has said that he kind of compares him to Creator. So this is a horse that I think mile and an eighth, mile and a quarter, mile and a half even, maybe a Belmont kind of horse. And then Eben on the far outside, he had trouble in start after start after start. Steve Margolis is pulling his hair out. And then last time, one turn mile at Churchill, he looked really good winning. He got a clean trump. He actually had a little trouble that day too, but he won. I'm just a little bit concerned about his potential to maybe get two turns as successfully as some of the others. And then he's got that really tough post. And then Lone Sailor on the rail for Tom Amos, he puts blinkers on. He just missed in the street sense. That was a good race for him. Third in the Breeders' Futurity. Didn't have a great trip in the Kentucky Jockey Club. Those are the three horses that I think outside the big two that have the opportunity to step up and take their games to the next level.
Talking with Joe Kristofek live from the fairgrounds here on the Horse Racing Radio Network this morning. Joe, Mark Cassie has cross-entered Wonder Godot, the filly, in both this race, the LeCompte, and in the Silver Bullet Day. More likely to go against the girls, you think, or what?
Yeah, I mean, that's all indications we're getting from the camp is that she's going to run in the girls' race. I mean, what I like to see her in the boys' race, sure. I mean, they've got Heavenly Love in the girls' race already. You know, but you have to look at the overall development of these horses, whether it's a filly or a colt, and it is only January. So if they do opt for the Silver Bullet Day, which it seems like they're going to, I think that's the right move.
Yeah, she doesn't even look like a cinch in the Silver Bullet Day, I don't think. So to run against the males I thought was a big mistake. Also, Kieran's supposed to come out from what I understand. Number 11.
Yeah, Kieran's coming out. Yeah, he's out. They said that a couple of days ago. So the horse off the also eligible list will draw in. And unless we have some further scratches this morning, a full field of 14.
Yeah, and of course our good friend.
13, if Wonder Godot, yeah, 13 if she scratches.
13 if she scratches, yeah. And our good friend Jeff Bloom of Bloom Racing Stable, they've been on a roll. He has Snapper Sinclair, number 2. Going to the post in the LeCompte. Steve Asmussen, the trainer, This is a horse that's a stakes winner on turf at Kentucky Downs. That was in September, but really has a pretty good dirt pedigree. Not so much a distance pedigree, being by City Zip out of a Yes It's True mare, but certainly a dirt pedigree. Any chance, Joe, that Snapper Sinclair can make a little noise in here?
Mike, there's always a chance.
Well said.
It's a good move by Mr. Steve. I mean, why not run him on dirt? Why not try it? He's got the likely favorite in the race. You always want to find out if they can run on dirt and how far they can go, because that's where the money's to be made. Not only, you know, when it comes to earning money in races, but potential stud value if you get that far. But, I mean, I've seen Snapper Sinclair run. I know Asmussen's very high on him. He was high on him going into the Breeders' Cup. That didn't work out so well, didn't have a good trip. But I think his eventual future is on turf, and not the kind of horse that I would bet in this race. I don't even, you know, he's going to be a big price, but I think this is a starting point, and that we'll see him back on grass next time.
Look at you, a Chicago boy, calling him Mr. Steve. Huh? You haven't even been in New Orleans that long. Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, he became Mr. Steve to me at Churchill. People call him Mr. Steve. The guy deserves respect. His resume speaks for itself. So Mr. Steve it is.
There you go.
Well, Mr. Joe, the Grade 3 LeCompte is race 9 on the program Saturday afternoon. Race 7 is the filly version of the race, the 3-year-old girls going in the Silver Bullet Day. We already talked about Wonder Godot, who is likely to go in that spot as opposed to facing the boys. Talk to me about this race. Who else can we look forward to seeing in there?
Yeah, I mean, Wonder Godot, she goes into her, I mean, she's probably going to battle her stablemate, Heavenly Love, for the favoritism. I like Wonder Godot, but, man, she couldn't have got a better trip than she got in the Demoiselle. She just got a perfect pressing trip. The fractions were dawdling, 50, 116, and 1. She did win impressively. She did gallop out well. You know, but in this game, it's risk versus reward. If you're betting, of course, I'd like to see her run well. You know, I'd like to see them all run well. The more horses that run well, the more fun it is leading up to the Oaks. Heavenly Love, on the other hand, she was on the bad part of the track in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. She was on the rail, which, as it's turned out, we all thought the rail was bad for the two Breeders' Cup days. And moving forward out of the Breeders' Cup, it has proven to be true time and time again. And she deserves another chance. I like Heavenly Love slightly over Wonder Godot. Blonde Bomber, on the other hand, in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, she was on the good part of the track where Caledonia Road was. And she ran an upset third at 30-1, but, you know, you have to respect her class. I really wish Stellar Moon was running in here. She's a daughter of Stellar Jane, who was earned a $1.5 million routing, you know, a daughter of Tappet. But it looks like Mike Stidham is going to scratch her and opt for an easier spot instead. That would have been my price shot had she stayed in. America's Tale has been really good in her last two races, but she's kind of had things her own way. And then maybe, I don't know, I mean, there's, as much as I'd really like to try to find that 8, 10, 12 to 1 shot to sink my teeth into, it's hard to find. And some of the other ones I just don't think are ready for this level of competition at this point.
Joe Kristofek with us from the Fairgrounds here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. The Silver Bullet Day, race 7 on a program that features 6 stakes races in New Orleans later this afternoon. Joe, what other races are you excited about today? Obviously, it's a great card, but I'm going to throw it to you and just kind of throw it to you in general. Which other races are you looking forward to seeing most, and which other horses maybe should we keep an eye on?
Yeah, I mean, some of these other races, some of these other stakes are just absolutely completely wide open, which is always great, obviously, for betting purposes. I'm really looking forward to seeing Cedar Town run. In the Louisiana, the player will be the favorite. The player is a fan favorite. Everybody loves the player, not only for his ability on the racetrack, but for his antics back in the barn. Aptly named, he's just such a cool horse. So I'd like to see him win. And we all, you know, Buff Bradley, he's got Groupie Doll, first foal running. He's got a sibling to the player running. He's in line for maybe a memorable Saturday. But I really like Stidham's horse in that race, Cedar Town. when he won, actually ran second at Keeneland. He got awarded first purse money in October. I thought Blue Ridge Traveler ran great that day. And then he came back and won the Zia Park Derby for Stidham a couple days before Thanksgiving and looked good doing it. I think it's an upside play. I think he's getting better and better and better. 10-1 in the morning line, I'd be shocked if he was half that, honestly. So don't get too excited when you see the 10-1. I think 4-1, 9-2 would be fair on him. But that's the horse on the program today that I'm going to definitely sink my teeth into.
Yeah, he looks good. He had a really nice blowout, too, 59-2. And Joe Bravo and Mike Stidham have proven to be a very formidable combination, winning at a 40% clip right now.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Stidham, very familiar with him from my days in Chicago. And I've said it 10 years ago, and I'll say it today. He is one of the best in the country at maximizing the talent that he has. This isn't a guy that gets $400,000, $600,000, $1.2 million horses in his barn. He gets a $75,000, $100,000, $125,000, sometimes $40,000, and he maximizes them. And this is just another case of that. And, yeah, one of the more under-the-radar tremendous horsemen in the country, I would say.
Yeah, he's
although this one cost $620. So.
Well, he's made a great career being kind of a second-string trainer for a lot of big stables. And it's a tribute to him and his program and the people that work for him. He does an excellent job. Talk a minute about the jockey colony there you have this year. It's like the best jockey colony at Fairgrounds in a long, long time.
Yeah, and it's so weird because at Churchill, I mean, Miguel Mena was like 10%, and Sean Bridgman, you know, was getting some crumbs here and there, and now we're here, and Sean and Miguel are just killing it. And, you know, even at Churchill, I mean, they didn't get the business that they're getting here at Fairgrounds, but you always knew. I mean, they're great riders, very accomplished. Mitchell Merle's having a great meet. Adam Biskitza is really burst onto the scene, doing a lot of the first call riding for Joe Sharp, who's second in the trainer standings. Robbie Alvarado, Corey Lannery, I mean, these just veteran guys that, you know, Chantel Sutherland's here. She's having a nice meet. Yeah, it's a deep, deep colony from top to bottom. Florent Giroux, two-time defending champion. Unfortunately, his father passed away about a week or 10 days ago, and he missed some time. So defending that championship, although there's a lot of time left, is going to be a little bit difficult for him. But, yeah, it's a really, really good colony top to bottom, and it's a pleasure watching these guys and gals ride every day.
Yeah, and speaking of jockeys, jockey Julien Leperoux is going to be riding in the LeCompte aboard Prince Lucky for trainer Larry Jones. Congratulations to Julien. This past week, officially became a U.S. citizen. So great to see that for Julien. He was posting pictures all over social media and obviously very excited to be officially welcomed to the United States here as a U.S. citizen. So congrats to Julien on that honor. Joe, one last question before we let you go. The track and the idiosyncrasies to that racetrack at the Fairgrounds, both the main track and the turf course, have you noticed anything, any trends in particular that might help people when they're handicapping the Saturday program?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we've had a lot of rain the last couple of days. So we're expecting a fast track. The turf course, still waiting on a condition for that, but there's going to be some give in it either way, you know, which could randomize things a little bit more on the grass course. When it's a firm grass course and a fast dirt track, I mean, they're both a little bit on the forward side, especially early in the card with the dirt. I mean, Grant Forster told me this a couple of years ago about the Fairgrounds. Speed almost always wins the first race. And I don't know if it has to do with, you know, just the fresh track being down and how things play here to begin with. But speed seems to hold up a lot better in the early part of the card. And then, like so often happens at a lot of tracks over the country, when the sun starts to go down, I don't know what it is, but, I mean, closers seem to equalize things a little bit. And I found that to be the case here. Like I said, there's going to be some give in the turf course today. So I would suggest looking for horses, if you can, that have proven to be successful over and off turf.
He's Joe Christofek. He is with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And Joe, really do appreciate the time and keep up the wonderful work at the fairgrounds. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, you're going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. And of course, you can embrace your passion at embracetherace.com. Because of that, I lied. I'm going to ask you one other question. What is it about this game and this sport that makes Joe Christofek embrace the race?
Man, like so many other people, it's a challenge. It's fresh every day. No matter if it's a $5,000 non-winners of two Louisiana bred sprint or it's the LeCompte. I mean, every race has a winner, and it's our job and our focus and our passion to try to find that winner. And yeah, it's the greatest game for so many reasons. I mean, from the time a horse is foal to the time I'm putting my $10 to win on it. I don't know. You guys know me. I'm passionate about the game, and I always will be. So we could talk for hours about that. But I would say the challenge is what gets me going.
Joe, well said, my friend. Go enjoy the rest of the afternoon, and good luck. Pick lots of winners, and watch out for that DeRosa character too.
Tremendous advice. I appreciate that.
Yeah, don't succumb to the grid.
All right, guys, thanks. You enjoy the day, too. Thanks for having me on, and maybe we'll talk again before the Risen Star.
You got it. Good luck, Joe. Yeah, great program there today. I mentioned the six stakes races, but JT, that LeCompte, and look, it's been a while since we've had a horse come out of the LeCompte and do anything in the Kentucky Derby. That's a little tease. I'm going to talk more about that as we move throughout the program, but this is a good field. I wouldn't say great field, but it's a good field.
No, it's not a great field, but we don't know yet. I mean,
it could turn out to be a great field.
There could be a Triple Crown winner in here. Who knows?
Correct.
You just don't know at this time of year. But yeah, it's very solid. It's big. It's going to be exciting. You know, there's horses at every pace point. There's speed horses. There's pressers. There's you know, the big finishers. So we've got a little something for everybody. It's a mile and 70 yards. It's going to be, you know, a pretty decently contested pace. So, you know, we should have some separation here. We should be able to figure out who some of the better horses are after this race.
And as Joe said, Steve Asmussen looking at number 8, Zing Zang, as being somewhat of a creator type of horse. He's by the same stallion in Tappet, and Zing Zang going to be putting in a late run today. Maybe a horse to tab for the Belmont Stakes in early June, if Steve is right about Zing Zang in today's LeCompte Stakes. All right, it is time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf segment, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus store of Lexington. And then we're back with more right here on the Equine Forum. Stay with us right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
For want of a nail, a shoe was lost. For want of a shoe, a race was lost. This is the story of the tragic demise of a thoroughbred who was thought by some to have been the greatest horse ever to don a set of racing plates. He raced in the colors of Darby Dan Farm and was trained by Lloyd Gentry. He was the son of Rebo out of Flower Bowl by Alibi, and by late April of his 3-year-old campaign had become the solid choice for the Kentucky Derby. He was a big, rock-solid colt who had muscles that literally rippled with raw power. In terms of confirmation, he was some kind of a thoroughbred specimen. He won his first 7 races by an average margin of 5.5 lengths and never had a rival finish closer than 4 lengths to him. Incredible! He'd never gone over 7/8 of a mile in any of his wins until the Bluegrass Stakes at Keeneland on April 28, 1966. In that race, he was beaten a bare nostril by the very good Abe's Hope, but, as it turned out, that was his greatest performance of an abbreviated career, which in fact ended with that race. He had run the final 5 furlongs of that race on a sloppy racetrack on what amounted to 3 legs and a mountain of courage. That story well worth recounting. He had been reshod April 21st, 1 week before the Bluegrass, after he had been plated by one farrier. Another put a new bar shoe on his left hind foot, which he had bruised in Florida. It appeared he might be carrying that foot a bit high on Sunday, April 24th, when he worked a mile in 140, and his stride was a measured one. Veteran horsemen well know that when a horse goes bad behind, it usually means trouble up front somewhere down the line. On April 27th, the morning before the Bluegrass, he worked 3/8 and 33 and 4 on a sloppy track. To the careful observer, it was apparent he was off a bit on his left front as he trotted back to the barn to be cooled out. In the bluegrass the next afternoon, he broke like a cannon shot and was six in front going around the clubhouse turn. At just about the 5/8 pole, he took a noticeably bad step, almost stopping in midair, as a matter of fact, and from that point on, he continued on nothing more than sheer, pure, raw courage. You see, at that point of the misstep, he had fractured the wing of the coffin bone in his left forefoot, as it was discovered later. Braulio Baeza, the cool Panamanian who rode him in six of his seven wins, said, quote, "He went around the turn fairly good, but as soon as he got into the straightaway on the backside, he tried to run out, which, in fact, hurt or sore horses are prone to do. Quote, "I tapped him on the shoulder a couple of times, trying to keep him straight, but he tried to get out all the way down the backside, and he was still trying to get out after the race," unquote. In that race, he galloped out a mile and a quarter in 2:03.2. On Sunday, May 1st, 6 days before the Kentucky Derby, the fracture showed up in x-rays. And not only was he subsequently withdrawn from the run for the Roses, but his racing career was at an end. That marvelous thoroughbred, who later went on to outstanding seasons of production in the breeding shed, and who was, in some observers' eyes, the very best to ever grace American racetracks, was Graustark. His story is indeed a tragic yet memorable moment in thoroughbred racing.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
What's on your mind, kid? Make it fast.
I'd like to work here at Jimmy John's, world's greatest gourmet sandwich shop, sir.
Why do you want to work at Jimmy John's, kid?
I'm perfect for Jimmy John's.
Doing what?
Delivery.
Delivery?
Delivery.
We deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
That's what I heard.
What'd you hear?
You deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
Then you heard right.
I'm a fast study, sir.
You know the Jimmy John's slogan?
The Jimmy John's slogan.
Jimmy John's slogan is sub so fast you'll freak.
Sub so fast you'll freak is a swell slogan, sir.
When people call for a Jimmy John's sandwich, they want it fast.
Then I'm your man, sir.
How so?
Because I'm fast.
Fast at what?
Fast at everything.
Can you deliver fast?
I can deliver fast.
How fast?
I can run a 440 in 220.
Minutes?
No seconds.
That's fast. You deliver before?
I delivered newspapers before.
Were you fast?
Very fast.
How fast?
People got tomorrow's paper today.
That's fast.
So do I have the job?
Not so fast. How do I know you're not just some fast talker?
I can get your references.
When?
Now.
These are good references.
Thank you.
But at Jimmy John's, you gotta be more than fast.
More than fast.
You gotta be polite.
Fast and polite.
Fast and polite.
I can do fast and polite.
Okay, give me some time to think it over.
Okay.
Okay, I thought it over. When can you start?
Now.
Now is good. What's your name, kid?
Stefan Amalapadopoulos.
Too long. How about Ed?
That's fine.
Welcome aboard, Ed.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com. Since 1940, the National HBPA has provided thoroughbred horsemen with a unified voice, representing their interests and needs before state and federal governments and improving business conditions for thoroughbred horsemen and their employees. With a seat on the board of major industry organizations, the National HBPA continues to support more than 30,000 individual owners, trainers, breeders, and backstretch personnel throughout the United States and Canada. Contact CEO Eric Hamelback to let your voice be heard and support the National HBPA by visiting hbpa.org. Adina Spring Stallion, Point of Entry.
Point of Entry scores to win the Man of War by four lengths.
A five-time Grade 1 winner, viewed by many to be the heir to Dynaformer's global legacy.
Wild final furlong coming here in the Sword Dancer, and here comes Point of Entry, who's running to daylight.
The first horse since Theatrical to win the New York Turf Triple Crown, accomplishing the feat by a combined nine lengths.
And they're coming down to the finish, and Point of Entry will go to the Breeders' Cup on a five-race winning streak.
Point of Entry hails from a remarkable female family, with his first four dams Grade 1 winners and or producers. Now with winners in four countries, including stakes winner Glamination and the sensational undefeated graded stakes winner Analyze It, widely regarded as the best turf horse in his crop.
The heir to Dynaformer and the next global sire is Point of Entry. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
This is David Jacobson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
Around the far turn, it is still Heart to Heart, who's been there all the way so far. Heart to Heart turning for home in front. War Correspondent second. Luke Saligas third. All included to the outside and looking for room as Takeover Target, who's now guided to the outside for a clear path. But Heart to Heart is still there. Heart to Heart by two. Luke Saligas second as they come down to the line. Heart to Heart, Luke Sally. Heart to Heart wins the Fort Lauderdale. Luke Sally was second, and then came All Included, Lucky, and Takeover Target.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on HRRN. Larry Colmus with the call of the Fort Lauderdale Stakes. That was back 2 years ago, 2016. Heart to Heart gets the victory that afternoon. He's going to try and do it again later today in that Grade 2 Fort Lauderdale, part of a big program at Gulfstream Park in Hallandale Beach. And by the way, that is also our Road to the Florida Derby Challenge race of the day. And if you haven't already played in our Road to the Florida Derby Challenge, you have plenty of time to get in and really plenty of time to catch the leaders and to win this thing. It's pretty simple. All you do is go to horseracingradio.net. That's our website, and click on the banner that takes you to the entry page and the rules page for our Road to the Florida Derby Challenge. And you're going to select a primary selection, the horse you think is going to win the Fort Lauderdale today. Maybe it's Heart to Heart. Maybe it's somebody else. And then you pick an alternate selection just in case your primary is scratched. You're going to get points based on where your horse finishes, first, second, or third, and that's how you can catch the leaders. And by the way, the leader right now sitting at 37 points, and this is a contest that runs all the way through the Fountain of Youth Stakes at Gulfstream, so you have plenty of time to get in and pick some winners and hopefully win your way to the Florida Derby here in 2018. It's a trip for two that includes lodging and airfare, all courtesy of our friends at Gulfstream Park. And they'll also provide you with tickets to the Florida Derby, too. Seats in 10 Palms, which if you've never been, is pretty awesome. So our thanks to Mike Nyman and all the folks at Gulfstream for making that possible.
Yeah, it's a great prize package. And then there's going to be some prizes for the runner-ups as well. But yeah, well worth playing, and we've had tremendous response.
More importantly, the winner is going to have the opportunity to come on this show with us on Florida Derby morning,
More importantly.
yeah. Forget about the airfare, the trip for two, the lodging. Forget about 10 Palms. You're going to get to come on this show with the Pontiff and the Baron.
Yeah.
And how cool is that?
And that and the dollar will get you a cup of coffee.
You know, most people are just canceling
their
entries.
Maybe $4
right
if you
now.
Go to Starbucks.
People, wait a minute, I got to do that? They're canceling. Take my entry out. Yeah. But now head over there now. You have until 30 minutes to the scheduled post to get those selections in for the Fort Lauderdale today. Heart to Heart, Jude, I know you love the horse, but he's as honest as they come, runs his race every time, and obviously he loves Gulfstream Park.
Yeah, he does. He's won 4 out of 5 starts there. As a matter of fact, the one he didn't win was last year's Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah. Came up a little short.
I don't know if that's such a good omen. He had a different schedule, though, last year. Last year, his first race at Gulfstream was in the El Prado Stakes, which he won wire to wire, and then he came back, and he may have bounced a little bit, although he had a better speed figure. He had a 5 points better speed figure.
Yep.
But, you know, it's interesting. This race is kind of unique in that the three top contenders, according to my handicapping, are the old dudes. Heart to Heart being 7 years old, Shining Copper being 8 years old, and Include being 7 years old. Those are the three horses I think are the top three in here. Now, Shining Copper.
This is prep for the Barbados.
Yeah, he'll be going to the Barbados, the Sandy Lane Barbados Gold Cup first Saturday in March. He's on a 2-race winning streak. Mr. Ramsey is absolutely dead set on winning it this year, and this is one of the horses he's going to send.
How tough is this horse going to be in Barbados if he gets him there?
I think he's pretty much a lock if he you know, is is sound and feeling good when he gets there. He's got tremendous speed and he can finish. And I don't know if there's going to be anybody in that race that can run with him. He's really doing well right now.
I don't know, Dorsett's been a thorn in Ken Ramsey's side there the last couple of years in Barbados.
Yeah, he may be back again. You know, he pulled off the miracle last year, but if Shining Copper runs, I think Mr. Ramsey's going to make his own luck there.
Yeah,
he's also supposed to take the Queen's Plate victor.
Sir Dudley Diggs,
and that's a potent entry right
wow.
there.
I mean, you know, we talk about that a lot, right? I mean, of course, we'll be there again to bring you that coverage of the Sandy Lane Barbados Gold Cup here on the network, the third consecutive year that we've gone to that tropical destination to do that. But Judy, the type of horse that it takes to win that race, it doesn't have to be a grade one caliber horse, right? If you have a grade one caliber horse, you're almost assured that you're going to, well, racing luck plays into it too, but you would think on paper you're assured that you're going to win that race. But you always say it's like a $50,000 allowance horse, maybe a grade three type of horse that could be really tough down there.
Yeah, a grade three horse would probably be odds on. I mean, yep. You see these horses. Well, Shining Copper, he's a grade three winner. He just won the River City at Churchill Downs, which is a grade three. He's all but within a neck of being a grade one winner in the Gulfstream Park Turf Handicap. So, I mean, he's the kind of horse that, you know, should be a short price if he runs there.
Yeah.
It's a very good horse.
And we regressed. We got talking about Barbados, as we typically do whenever that topic comes up. But in terms of the Fort Lauderdale today, which is where we started, you said the three, well, we'll use your hashtag, old guys rule. The three older horses in the race are the ones that you have your eye on.
Yeah. To me, because of the speed in this race, Heart to Heart and Shining Copper are both stone speed horses, and Heart to Heart's not going to get the easy lead that he would like to have. That doesn't matter to him sometimes. Sometimes he outruns horses in pace duels and goes on to win.
Yep.
But I like All Included. Of course, I always like All Included, and he disappoints me more than he doesn't. But he also ran in the Fort Lauderdale last year, finished third. He had a very rough trip. I'm not saying he was going to win, but he could have run better, I think. He's had a prep at Gulfstream, first race off the layoff December 16th. His last race before that was at Monmouth in the Red Bank on May the 27th. So he came off a layoff last time, knocked the rust off, and I think he's going to run a big race for Todd Pletcher. He's been training at Palm Beach Downs and doing quite well. So it's an interesting race, and looking forward to that one.
And a great contest race. Again, it is our designated race of the day for a Road to the Florida Derby Challenge. Enter now if you're playing. Well, thank you for participating. Make sure you get those entries in 30 minutes prior to the scheduled post time for the Fort Lauderdale this afternoon. And if you haven't started to play, go there now, horseracingradio.net, and take your shot at winning a trip for two to this year's Florida Derby. We'll get to a break. We'll come back and get you set for a busy second half of the show. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, your home for the 2018 Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
Verrazano, brilliant winner of six of his first seven starts, including the Grade 1 Wood Memorial.
And they're coming down to the finish, and it will be Verrazano!
And the Haskell, by a record 9 3/4 lengths, earning a buyer figure of 116, the highest of any three-year-old in 2013.
And Verrazano and John Velasquez have blown away their competition!
Verrazano, a great-looking son of More Than Ready, standing in Ashford.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Hey, the holidays are over. It's January. But why not continue that holiday feeling at Tony's? Great food, great service, and that family atmosphere that everyone has come to love. Right across from Triangle Park, it's Tony's Steaks and Seafood. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com and keep the holidays going.
Airdrie Studs Summer Front, a gorgeous millionaire son of the Great War Front, has wasted no time in establishing himself as a major force in the commercial marketplace. Known on the racetrack for his electric turn of foot, Summer Front's first crop weanlings averaged over $100,000 with a sensational $100,000 median at the Keeneland November sale, all from an initial stud fee of just $10,000. Airdrie Studs Summer Front. Think about it.
Hey, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you to tune into a special edition of Express Bet Radio on HRN this Monday, January 15th. We'll have live racing from Gulfstream in Santa Anita, bonus coverage from other tracks around the country, take a look back at some of the weekend stakes action, and talk about upcoming events in the sport of kings, like the Eclipse Awards and the world's richest horse race, the $16 million Pegasus World Cup. You can listen on Sirius 219, XM 206, or stream it live worldwide on your home for all of racing's biggest days at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is Doug O'Neill. My favorite radio show is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Three quarters goes up in 110.37. They're into the stretch of Vino Molcano. Clings to the lead. Here is Good Magic running up alongside Firenze Fire, charging to. Firenze Fire to the outside, takes the lead. Good Magic battles on from the rail. On the far outside, moving up into third lane is Cowboy Karma, but it's going to be Firenze Fire in the champagne. Good Magic was second, Enticed was third, Cowboy Karma finished fourth.
The announcer, Larry Colmus, with the call of the Champagne Stakes. That was impressive. That was last year for Firenze Fire. We'll see him back in action later this afternoon in the Jerome at Aqueduct, assuming that they are running races at Aqueduct. If you're just joining us, we had to call some audibles here on the Equine Forum this morning because of the severe weather coming into the central Kentucky area. So we are recording this program on Friday morning. So there is an opportunity, of course, for Aqueduct to cancel racing for Saturday. So if that's already happened, well, we apologize for that. But assuming that they are going to run, then Firenze Fire are going to be tough in that Jerome later this afternoon. And Big A, Anthony Stabile, from our Express Bet radio show and many other programs, is going to be with us in just a few minutes at 9 o'clock Eastern to give us an update on what you can expect in the New York area and racing at Aqueduct. Buff Bradley going to be with us in the second half of the show as well. Buff sending out the player in the Louisiana Stakes, and he's also sending out Groupie Doll's very first foal, a colt by Tappet named Tappability, making his first start at the fairgrounds later today too. So that should be a lot of fun to visit with Buff coming up right around 9:40 Eastern time. Hey, don't forget that American Pharoah, well, you remember him as a Triple Crown winner, but boy, did he make headlines at the November breeding stock sales this past year, and it was no different at the recently completed Keeneland January sale. Offspring of the Triple Crown champion accounted for the highest-priced short yearling on both day one and day two of the sale, and at the opening session, prominent owners Alex and Joanne Lieblong secured a colt from Crestwood Stud for $400,000. The star of the show, however, was hip number 533, who sold for a cool $1 million to MV Magner of Coolmore Stud on day number two. He was the highest priced short yearling of the sale and the third highest priced colt in January sale history, a half brother to the brilliant Grade One winner Caravaggio, who is entering his first year at stud at Coolmore's Irish base this year. And of course, as American Pharoah enters his third breeding season at Coolmore's Ashford Stud, the market has sent a clear signal that they expect big things to come when the first Pharoah babies hit the track in 2019. How cool is that going to be?
Yeah, that's great. And did you see the beautiful statue that Oaklawn unveiled of American Pharoah?
I have not seen it yet, no.
I mean, I haven't seen it in person, but right. I saw lots of pictures of it on the web. It's beautiful. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, really good.
So.
Yeah. Really, it's cool that they did that, right?
Yeah, really cool.
Yeah. By the way, Ron Moquette joined us from Oaklawn Park earlier this week for our trainer talk show. If you missed it, go back to our website, horseracingradio.net. It was a really fun hour with a really smart guy in our business. And Jude, you tweeted out that Ron Moquette just gets it. And listening to that interview for an hour and listening to Ron talk, 100% right.
Yeah, I think he really has, you know, the grasp of the game and understands what it takes to be a top trainer and how to take care of his clients, and really good.
Yeah, really good stuff. That's at horseracingradio.net. We're back with hour number two in just a moment, right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It is Forever Unbridled. Abel Tasman charging but running out of time. Forever Unbridled's going to do it. Forever Unbridled has won the Breeders' Cup Distaff.
It is Irish War Cry. And on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish War Cry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
Originating from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum.
Shaman Ghost is trying to get into second, then Neolithic. Back forth is Noble Bird, followed by Keen Ice. But what a race! What a sport! What a horse! Arrogate rops in the Pegasus. He won it by 3.5.
They're into the stretch. Good Magic's in front. Good Magic pulls away from Solomini, and Boldoro will not get there today. Good Magic's going to win his first race, and he's going to do it in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum rolling on. A very busy program this morning, covering a lot of ground as we have major Derby prep action in the Bayou of Louisiana. Also taking place in New York and at Oaklawn Park on Monday. We're going to have the Smarty Jones Stakes. So a lot of things to look forward to as the road to the Derby begins to heat up, and much more to come over the next several weeks. But certainly today, a first step for many of those Derby hopefuls. And we talked with Joe Christofek from the Fairgrounds in the first half of the program. He filled you in on not only the LeCompte Stakes today and some of the contenders you can look forward to seeing there, but also the Silver Bullet Day, the three-year-old filly race, which will tie into the Kentucky Oaks picture. If you missed that interview, all you have to do is head back to our website after we finish here this morning and check out the podcast of this show at your leisure. You can do that on our website, horseracingradio.net. JT, I don't know. We threw out a poll question last week. Didn't do one here this week, but we did one last week that said which race, the Sham or the Mucho Macho Man? The Sham was at Santa Anita, the Mucho Macho Man was at Gulfstream, was most likely to produce a Kentucky Derby contender. Not the winner, but a contender. And the public, HRN Nation, coming out and saying they thought, yeah, it's the Sham that was probably most likely to do it. McKinsey looked good winning that one. Mask looked very good winning the Mucho Macho Man. If I ask you that question now... Which race do you think is most likely to produce the Kentucky Derby starter?
Well, I think just percentage-wise, you'd have to go with the Sham, first of all. It's a graded race and provided points. The Mucho Macho Man was a no-points race. And, I thought Mask ran great. And I think Mask is certainly one of the top horses on the trail. McKenzie, he's pretty freakish.
Yeah.
He ran a big race right back. My contention is, Solomini beat him on the square. Is Solomini better than McKenzie? We don't know yet.
Right.
We'll find out, I'm sure. But I think both of those horses are excellent horses. So, it's a great problem to have. As we talked about earlier, it's a very deep group right now. There's a lot of horses with potential, a lot of upside. They're in the hands of elegant conditioners. So we've got, a lot to look forward to.
Yes, very much so. Also looking forward to this interview coming up with the Big A, Anthony Stabile. He is with us now from New York. Big A, good morning, my friend.
Baron, Pontiff, what's happening?
Everything's rainy here.
Yeah, the rain is here. The snow going to be blowing through as people are listening to this on Saturday morning. Anthony, we talked about this earlier, and if people are just tuning in, we are recording this program on Friday morning. People listening to it on Saturday morning, of course, but because of the weather, we had to call an audible. What's it look like for that Saturday program at Aqueduct? Are we going to get it in?
It's funny, Baron. I'm getting ready, being that it's Friday morning. I was getting ready to go over and do Talking Horses here today. plan is to run Friday, obviously. We're supposed to get an inch of rain throughout the day on Saturday, overnight as well. So let's keep an eye to the sky. I feel like they're going to want to get this race in, though, Mike. You know, originally supposed to be run on New Year's Day, on Monday, January 1st, and we lost a ton of time here. Friday was scheduled to be the first live racing day in New York, literally canceled Thursday, as we were doing Talking Horses. We pulled the plug on Talking Horses. They canceled a half hour before post time. So I would think they're going to do what they can to get this race in. You got to remember, February 3rd, is the next prep on the New York road to Louisville with the Withers, which will stretch out to a mile and an eighth. That's a points race as well, so there's not enough time, I don't think, to accommodate both. Because I think now you still got 3 weeks where you can come back and run Jerome Withers. I think they're going to do whatever they can to get the card in today, Saturday. Right.
Yeah, Saturday. And that Grade 3 Jerome is the race that, you know, does feature the 3-year-old debut of Firenze Fire, who was really, really good as a 2-year-old. Didn't fare all that well in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, but now he gets back to New York, his home track, and, you know, you have to think he's going to be a handful in that race this afternoon if it does go.
Yeah. Look, he's going to be 2-5. And deservingly so. When you look down at the horses he's running against, not only is he a graded stake, not only is he the only graded stakes winner, he's the only stakes winner in the field, period. A grade three win up at Saratoga and the Sanford, of course, the win in one of the most historic and prestigious 2-year-old races in the country in the grade one Champagne, where he beat eventual Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner Good Magic, Enticed came back to win the KJC. You know, key race, that Champagne, we're saying the Champagne's a key race, you know, like we're reinventing the wheel. But it's coming up a little bit of a key race from last year. And, you know, he's getting to do his thing now. Maybe if you have a knock on Frenzy Fire, it's going to be getting around two turns with that pedigree, and maybe the two turns is not going to be to his liking. But listen, he hasn't done much wrong around one turn. I do wonder a little bit, even though he's bred to handle a wet track, save the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, that hopeful wasn't his best race. And there was some moisture in the track that day. Regardless of whether we get a quarter of an inch of rain or an inch of rain, there's going to be moisture in that track at Aqueduct on Saturday. So I guess that would be the one reservation you would have. But from a class standpoint right now, he is easily the most established of this field of eight.
Yeah, it seems like his races are best around one turn. You know, he's kind of an in and outer. I hate to say that because, you know, he has such a short career. But he started out gangbusters and then, you know, took a step back in the hopeful, came back, redeemed himself in the Champagne, and then, you know, his last race, I don't know, maybe he didn't like the track, maybe whatever. Maybe it was the distance. I don't know. But he doesn't really – he doesn't give you that warm and fuzzy, consistent feel.
No, he absolutely does not. I'll tell you why. You know, and I know you're a big fan of this crop, Jude. You were our first guest on the Countdown to the Kentucky Derby segment we're doing now on Wednesdays or Thursdays on Express Bet Radio. He's got the kind of look to him that he's going to be a real good 7/8 to a mile horse. I agree with you. I like this crop as well, and I think they're all going to find their way eventually as to what they want to do. He has that look of the one-turn closer, like just making the one big run. More often than not, those horses that make up a lot of ground late, they're not the most consistent sorts, because, and it's not necessarily their fault. It's the trip they're going to pull. And, you know, in the Champagne, and he was really impressive in the Champagne. He pulled it looks like a good trip on paper because they went so fast, but he did a lot of running in the Champagne. So he could have very well went the wrong way and bounced in the Breeders' Cup. That could have very well happened, too. It's just, yeah, you never know. Like, the hopeful trip was a great trip. He just didn't fire. And I think in-out's a good way to categorize him. Man, they're just, those horses are just not trustworthy.
Big A, Anthony Stabile with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Anthony, who are some of the other New York-based three-year-olds that we should be keeping an eye on as we move down that road to the Kentucky Derby?
You know, Mike, the one I've been waiting for to come back is Empire Line. A couple of New York breds, actually, Empire Line and Audible. Empire Line, owned by our pals over at West Point in the George Weaver Barn. He was sensational on debut, beating state breds. Again, the Damon Runyon's been canceled twice now. He's supposed to be running in that against fellow state breds. And Audible, a horse for Todd Fletcher, another New York bred, who won a off-the-turf four-horse field against Open Company. Jude and I talk about this a lot. The younger horses, for me, and this is just one of my angles, with the younger horses, I don't necessarily worry too much about what they're beating. I watch how they're doing it. I'm a big eye test guy. And Audible's the kind of horse that he is doing everything right as of now. I was actually, you know, the Damon Runyon and the Jerome were originally 2 days apart when they were both scheduled on, I believe it was December 30th and January 1st. I was a little surprised both Empire Line and Audible were running the New York bred race, but there's not really that much of a difference in purse. You just think that if you're thinking like I'm thinking, you want to get some of those Derby points. But those are the two here that I think you should keep an eye on. A couple of New York breds. I was impressed with both of them. Really liked Empire Line's debut, though. And I'm the kind of guy where I'm a little more forgiving of a bad debut, but also can appreciate a good debut that much more. He was really good in his debut.
What do you make of Seven Trumpets in the Jerome? That's another West Point thoroughbred horse of Dale Roman's, and he's had three sprints. Now he's stretching out. He kind of intrigues me a little bit.
Yeah, you feel like people talk about Derby dozens, which should be Dale's dozen this year. He's got a million horses pointed to Louisville on the first Saturday in May. Well, look, this horse took a ton of money at Ellis Park in his debut. He didn't run a step. Well, that's a lie. He ran for about a quarter of a mile and folded up his tent. But again, I'm very forgiving of debuts. And you come back and you run those two races, both at 6.5 furlongs. And I like the fact that you could see that three-month layoff between July and October. And, you know, that extra half furlong, instead of six going 6.5 or 7, that impresses me when they win off the bench like that. And he was really impressive. Probably reacted a little bit on that Stars of Tomorrow card, yet won anyway. Really dug his heels in that day and showed that he doesn't mind getting himself into a little bit of a dogfight, which is impressive. I love seeing that from young horses. Now he gets a little freshening. His sire, Morning Line, they've all been running. And you got to like the fact that he's stretching out to the one-turn mile in here. He's been all one-turn in the sprints, obviously. I'm very curious to see what Paco Lopez's presence means for this horse. I don't see a ton of real speed in here. And this horse is right on some pretty good paces. I'm wondering if the plan isn't to just get him in front. They could take off some of the other speed in here, maybe some of the cheaper speed, for lack of a better term. But when Paco Lopez is in the irons, there's always the chance that you're going to be on the front end. And when you combine the speed he showed in his debut with the fact that he was on a couple of decent paces, I won't be surprised if Seven Trumpets is the one leading this field down that long aqueduct backstretch.
No, you mentioned the fact, Anthony, that they're expecting rain in the New York area over the course of the next, 24 hours or so. We could see a wet track potentially for the Jerome on Saturday afternoon. Only one horse in the race, I was just scanning through very quickly, has a win over a wet track, and that's number 5, Smooth B, who is going to be a big price in here for trainer Robert Reed Jr. Any chance that if it does come up wet, like we're expecting it, that you change kind of your handicapping scenario here and say, all right, I'm going to take a shot with somebody other than, say, Firenze Fire, who's going to be a massive favorite?
Yeah, I think you got to keep an eye on not only will the moisture affect how a horse will like the actual surface, but up here especially, a bias can be established. And I don't know if Ferenc Fire is that good to start beating biases, because these biases get pretty serious here in New York. I'll tell you a horse, Mike, if this track comes up real wet, a horse that I was looking at, the six Old Time Revival, he has a really – I like his wet track pedigree. He ran against a couple of decent sprinters down at Laurel to start his debut in Barry Lee in VIP code. They're both okay sprinting. He stretched out to 7 furlongs off a July to December layoff last time and absolutely galloped after a little bit of a bobble at the start. He's by Brethren, who's a half the Super Saver. We all know how good Super Saver was on a wet track. He won the Kentucky Derby on it. This horse, I think, is going to really like a wet track. He's bred to. He's another one with some tactical speed. If the track comes up wet, he's the kind of horse at a price. Maybe Ferenc Fire is just overwhelming for these, or too overwhelming. But he's the kind of horse at a price I would look around. That Smooth B, like you mentioned, I know he won in the slot, but it was down at Parks, and I'm not too sure what he beat in the middle of August at Parks, and the rest of his race is suspect. I know he won going the mile at Laurel, but when he ran against horses like Engage and Barry Lee, he got beat a pole. He's really not for me. But if you want a wet track, a little bit of a pedigree play, this Old Time Revival in number six, he's a horse I would definitely use in all my gimmicks.
The Big A, Anthony Stabile, with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Don't forget, you can catch him every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday afternoon as host of our Express Bet radio programs on Sirius 219, XM 206. Those coming your way from 3 to 6 Eastern. You can also catch him as the host of the BristNet.com call-in show from 6 to 7 every Thursday night, and the Weekend Stakes Preview Show presented by Naira Betts with the Pontiff. They host that one together. That's every Friday from 6 to 7 Eastern, and that entire schedule is up on our website, horseracingradio.net. Big A, before I let you go, do have a little bone to pick with you, my friend. I'm getting word that you're doing my material. You're stealing my shtick.
Whoa.
Yeah, the countdown, my friend.
Well, I think it's a nice way to welcome. It's the countdown to the Kentucky Derby segment. So I think it's a nice way to introduce our esteemed guests on the segment. I'm sorry, Mike. I don't think you're the first person that ever used the Kentucky Derby countdown clock that's available right on KentuckyDerby.com. I'm fairly certain others have done this. You're not blazing that trail, Baron.
All right, wait. Just for the record, 112 days, 5 hours, 38 minutes, and 37 seconds away from the Run for the Roses, and that's the way it's done, Big A. Appreciate it, my friend. Thanks for being with us.
I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right, the Big A, Anthony Stabile. And, hopefully racing does happen at Aqueduct later today. As Anthony alluded to, Jude, it looks like they're going to do everything they can to run that program. And if it's just rain and the track is safe, they'll proceed.
Yeah, well, that's what we want. Yep. We want safe.
Yep, exactly. All right, we're going to get to another commercial break here, and when we come back, we'll have our Blood Horse News update, and then going to tell you about the only horse ever to run in the LeCompte Stakes and go on to win the Kentucky Derby. That's right, there's only been one. We'll talk about that next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Power.
And Tapazara, sterling performance today. Tapazara and Cory Nakatani take the dirt mile.
Passion.
And it's American Pastime in a very, very impressive effort today.
Performance.
But they're way far behind Monomoy Girl. Sharp in victory was she by 5 under the wire.
Gainsway Stallion Tapazar is Tappet's leading miler, displaying brilliant speed throughout his career, breaking his maiden by 10.5 lengths as a 2-year-old, wiring the Grade 3 Sham Stakes by 4.5 lengths at 3, and running away with the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile by 2.25 lengths at 4. Among the leading second crop sires of 2017, Tapazar has stamped his early progeny with his same quality and speed. From the family of Tappa's champion filly, Untappable, and the sire of 50 winners, 2 stakes winners, 2 graded stakes horses, and more than $3 million in progeny earnings, Tapazar, standing at Gainsway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
fans, come join us for a special three-day weekend as we'll be open for Martin Luther King holiday racing on Monday, which is also Dollar Day with $1 beers and sodas. Phillies and Mariners will be front and center all 3 days. On Saturday, the Grade 2 $200,000 La Cañada will highlight a nine-race card. On Sunday, a pair of $75,000 stakes, the Kalukan Queen and the Astra will serve as co-features. And on Monday, the Grade 3 Megahertz at 1 mile on turf is our main event. First post time through Monday is at 12:30. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Spendthrift Farm presents Gormley, a dominant front-runner stakes winner in his second start at two.
Gormley with a 2.5 length lead. Gormley wins the front runner.
A $1 million Santa Anita Derby winner at three.
Gormley takes the lead, and Gormley wins the Santa Anita Derby.
He joins Orb as Malibu Moon's only multiple Grade 1 winning millionaires at stud. Gormley, new for 2018 to Spendthrift Farm.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
But it's a domineering display by the ultra-talented McKenzie as he takes the sham while well in hand.
McKenzie, the son of Darley stallion Street Sense, continued his progression on the Kentucky Derby trail over the weekend with an impressive victory in the Grade 3 Sham Stakes, remaining undefeated in three starts while earning a 97 buyer speed figure. And that winning effort makes McKenzie your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Street Sense, the first horse to win both the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and the Kentucky Derby. McKenzie is one of six individual Grade 1 winners on dirt for Street Sense over the past 5 years. Only Tappet, Curlin, and Darley Stallion Bernardini have more. To learn more about Street Sense and all the Darley Stallions, visit DarleyAmerica.com.
My name is Ego Lescanos. Listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
War Emblem is the leader as the field turns for home. Proud Citizen still hanging in there with the fighting chance. Perfect Trip is down toward the inside. Came Home is putting in his run. Now he's about 4 lengths from the lead. Harmon's Holiday is picking it up. Here comes Medallion Doro. He's there on the far outside. 1 furlong to go. War Emblem is still there. War Emblem, and he's pulling away. He's got another gear. War Emblem coming down to the final 16th. Now he's in front by 3. And now he's going to win it. War Emblem has won the Derby in front-running fashion. A beautiful ride there by Victor Espinosa. Proud Citizen finishing second, followed by Perfect Trip, then farther back Medallia Doro. So it is War Emblem to win the Kentucky Derby, trained by the ebullient Bob Dafford and owned by a Saudi Arabian prince.
How about that? Tom Durkin with the call of War Emblem's victory in the Kentucky Derby. And you might be wondering, well, why did we play that one for you coming out of the commercial break? Going to tell you that in just a minute. It is significant when you look at the prep races that are taking place later this afternoon. Before we get to that, though, do want to bring you our Blood Horse news update and our weekly look at the top headlines from BloodHorse.com. New owners plan to restart racing at Yavapai Downs. This is pretty cool. A Phoenix-based ownership group that also includes Kentucky Downs president Corey Johnson has purchased Yavapai Downs with plans to restart racing at the Prescott Valley, Arizona track. Now, the real estate investment and development company J-Corp Partners announced at the January 11th Arizona Racing Commission meeting that its affiliate, J&J Equine Enterprises, has closed on the purchase of the 120-acre track property. The new owners include J-Corp principals Tom, Dave, and Mike Arthur, as well as Joe Jackson and Kentucky Downs president Corey Johnson. Yavapai features a 90,000-square-foot clubhouse and grandstand and accommodations for 800 horses. The property was purchased for $3.22 million out of federal bankruptcy court, with the new owners planning to invest millions of dollars worth of improvements. That's exciting news, and congrats to all of those involved with Yavapai Downs. Don't forget that if you're looking for updated news, all you have to do is go to Blood Horse Daily. Have the latest racing, breeding, and industry news and analysis, plus entries, results, race replay videos, and more at your fingertips with the Blood Horse Daily app, updated throughout the day or delivered to you daily in an email. Both are free. Go to bloodhorse.com/daily to download the app or sign up. All right, Mike Penn and Jude Feld in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. Jude, I went with that clip of War Emblem winning the Kentucky Derby for a specific reason. When you look at the prep races that we're going to see coming up, not just today, but Monday at Oaklawn, you have the LeCompte, which we talked about throughout the program already. Joe Kristofek joined us in the first half of the program from the fairgrounds. The LeCompte at the fairgrounds, you have the Jerome in New York, and then you have the Smarty Jones Stakes at Oaklawn on Monday. The only one of those prep races to have produced a Kentucky Derby winner is the LeCompte. And you have to go back to War Emblem when he pulled it off. He was beaten in the LeCompte, if you remember, and then came back and won the Kentucky Derby later that year.
Yeah, he won the Illinois Derby, right?
When it was, that's right, he did, when it was still a money race.
Before the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, before the point system.
That's when Baffert bought him out of the Illinois Derby.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah, but think about that. So the Jerome, if you're looking for the Derby winner, has not produced a Kentucky Derby winner, nor has the Smarty Jones at Oaklawn. So historically speaking, anyway, you have to look toward the LeCompte as being the race most likely to produce a Derby winner this year.
Yeah, because Smarty Jones did win the Kentucky Derby.
Smarty Jones did, yes.
Yes, but he started in the Southwest, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, yeah. Good
don't
memory.
Don't ask me how I know this.
What'd you have for breakfast this morning?
I actually had clue. I had a bar. I didn't have time to have a proper breakfast, a proper Southern breakfast, or even an English fry-up.
An English fry-up.
You ever have an English fry-up?
I don't even know what the heck an English fry-up is.
Eggs and beans and bangers and tomatoes. Fantastic. Lord Michael Taylor made one for me in Barbados, and I've been a fan ever since.
Wow. Wow. Hey, let me take this one step further with you, since I have no idea what... That sounds like nothing I would probably eat. But, right? I mean, you know me. Look, I go to Waffle House, and I get, you know, the eggs over easy. I get the hash browns, and I get the wheat toast.
Welcome to the Big A Show, folks.
You know this. That's as crazy as I get with my breakfasts usually. Maybe a little steak and eggs from time to time. That's pretty good, too, if I want to clog a few arteries. All right, so the Champagne is a race that Friends A Fire won. Now, I talked about the Jerome later today, where Friends A Fire will be a heavy favorite. That race has not produced a Kentucky Derby winner, but the Champagne has. The Champagne, as a matter of fact, has produced 23 Kentucky Derby winners that is tied with the Bluegrass and the Florida Derby as the prep race that has produced the most Derby winners. But, JT, you have to go back a long way to find the horse, the last horse to win the Champagne and then go on and win the Kentucky Derby. And it was this horse right here.
From the extreme outside, Union City and Diazzo, then Corby, Prairie Bayou now moves to the extreme outside. Also gaining ground from the inside, it's Sea Hero. Sea Hero now on the inside. He gets the lead. It's Sea Hero drawing off Personal Hope, Prairie Bayou, and Wild Gale. But Sea Hero, he upsets them, wins the Derby. Prairie Bayou looks like up for second.
How about that? Sea Hero in 1993. He won the Champagne, then he came and won the Kentucky Derby. The last horse to pull off the Champagne Derby double. You did have Super Saver in 2010, who was fourth in the Champagne for Todd Pletcher, came back and won the Derby later that year. But the last horse to pull off the double, Sea Hero, back in 1993. Mike Battaglia with the call there. How cool was that?
Yeah, that was very cool. Paul Mellon winning it. Roque Bestable.
Yeah.
The statue in the, speaking of statues, statue of Sea Hero in the paddock at Saratoga.
Yep.
Which is
won the
cool.
Travers.
Won the Travers.
Yeah, I was there that day.
Where
he won the Travers, yeah. I was actually standing by the rail toward the top of the stretch, and so I can still kind of picture him making that move to win the Travers Stakes, somewhat similar to what he did in the Derby, but he had a really nice trip in the Kentucky Derby under Jerry Bailey.
Yeah, Mac Miller, the trainer, and wow. I mean, those guys, That was one of the longest owner-trainer relationships in history, Paul Mellon and Mac Miller.
Yeah, such a class act.
Yeah, yeah, very cool.
Really classy. And, you know, you think about not only those moments, but you hear the name Prairie Bayou in that call. Remember Prairie Bayou and how good he was? Of course, you know, he ended up losing his life far too soon. But Prairie Bayou was a horse that was just on his A game. I think he was actually favored in that Kentucky Derby, wasn't he?
He probably was. Yeah, he was a beast of a horse.
Yeah, really good. I love going back and listening and watching old races like that, because some of the names that pop up, not just the winners, but some of the names that finish behind them, you go, oh, yeah, I remember that. Oh, geez, I forgot all about that horse.
It's fun to do on a rainy day or whenever you have some time to go back and look and listen. I like to look at old programs too.
Yeah.
Remember horses of my youth.
There were horses that, you know, and everybody probably has these stories, but there were horses that as we, you know, as everybody got into horse racing and started following the races, for me anyway, there were plenty of horses in New York that I'll never forget. They weren't necessarily major grade one stakes winners, but, you know, they were horses that for whatever reason, you just latched on to them and said, this is a really cool horse. There was a horse by the name of Red Hot Red, who was kind of a hard-knocking claiming horse that I used to really, really like. There was an entry that used to run all the time in New York, Federal Funds and Jacksonport, and they would run together. It seemed like every time they were 1 and 1A. They were always coupled when they would show up in the races. And those were a couple of horses that I remember. You know, again, people are probably going, who the heck are those horses? But, you know, for me, growing up, those were horses that they still hold a place for me.
Yeah, absolutely. My son is named after one of my favorite old horses, Miles Tyson. And he was a very good sprinter and trained by a guy named Frank Childs, who was in his 80s when I was watching Miles Tyson run. And he'd come to the paddock with 4 ace bandages, this old horse. You know, he looked like if you pushed your finger on him, he'd fall over. And
yeah.
He'd go out there and run 108 and change. You know, it was just really cool horse. And I was in love with him. And that's how Miles got his name. There was an entry, too, when I was a kid. I know it's a family show, but the one horse's name was Ben Dover, and the other one was C. Period How It Fits. F-I-T-Z.
You're kidding. These were names that they were, at that point, they were able to get through. Those.
Well, you know, it's funny because on their own, it didn't look too weird,
yeah.
Right? I mean, Ben Dover sounds right. Like a guy, right?
Right.
I mean, and then C. Period right. How It Fits.
Yeah. You've had a lot of those names over the years that have gotten by. I mean, I remember the horse used to run here in Central Kentucky at Turfway and at Keeneland. It was 2 words, but it was Hall Lass.
Right.
Right? And when you say it fast, of course, it came out like something else. But
right. Hoof Hearted.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There have been a million of them. But how about this? Let's, you know, I'm sure everybody has these types of horses that have captured them for whatever reason, then horses that aren't even prominent names. Hit us up on Twitter, at HRN on Twitter. Send us a tweet and let us know, who was your horse and why? You know, why was that a horse that captured you for whatever reasons? You know, you're Red Hot Red.
Mambo Jambo.
Yeah.
That was a horse that used to run all the time in the last race at Santa Anita. And my dad, my brothers, and I, we always loved him because he was always in the trifecta.
Yep.
He finished first, second, third every time he ran practically.
Yeah.
He was pretty cool.
I mean, yeah, names like, you know, at Saratoga, I used to go there with just a camera and take pictures. And, you know, Capote Bell
was Capote another. Bell.
Yeah, remember? Yeah. Flat Fleet Feet. Yeah. Remember that horse?
Yep.
I mean, just, you know, names that just pop up just off the top of my head. Of course, then you had, like, Sky Beauty, for example, who I was a massive fan of Sky Beauty and, you know, horses like that. So
yeah, it's the good ones, you know, it's easy to become a fan of, but every once in a while a horse just strikes you and you really like them for whatever reason.
Yeah, great game, great sport. Let us know your horse that maybe is a bit under the radar that you've fallen in love with over the years at HRN on Twitter and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, another way to let us know. We'll get to another break. We'll come back. Trainer Buff Bradley is in the on-deck circle. We'll talk to him next. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, your home for the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back.
Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Kentucky Derby winner Orb has emerged as one of the nation's most promising young stallions. The leading freshman sale sire of weanlings, yearlings, and two-year-olds, his first runners are off to a fast start. His debut winners have dazzled on the track, scoring on both dirt and turf. In the sales ring, his yearlings continue to command top prices, including the $1 million co-sale topper at Saratoga. Outstanding value, outstanding results, Orb, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Gulfstream's championship meet is in full stride with a record 94 stakes races worth $28.6 million in purses, highlighted by 12 Super Saturday programs, including the $16 million Pegasus World Cup on January 27th and the ExpressBet.com Florida Derby on March 31st. Every Saturday, come out early to enjoy breakfast at Gulfstream from 8 to 10:30, and be sure to register for the Pegasus World Cup Betting Championship taking place January 26th and 27th with an estimated total prize pool of more than $500,000. For more information, visit GulfstreamPark.com.
Hey, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you to tune into a special edition of ExpressBet Radio on HRN this Monday, January 15th. We'll have live racing from Gulfstream in Santa Anita, bonus coverage from other tracks around the country, take a look back at some of the weekend stakes action, and talk about upcoming events in the sport of kings, like the Eclipse Awards and the world's richest horse race, the $16 million Pegasus World Cup. You can listen on Sirius 219, XM 206, or stream it live worldwide on your home for all of racing's biggest days at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, I'm Richard Migliori, and I love listening to Horse Racing Radio Network. Good night, Barbados.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
They come to the top of the lane. Teddy's Promise on the inside. Proofy Dollar's right there. Dance Card to Grey on the outside. Sweet Lulu tries to hang tough along the inside as well. Proofy Doll hanging on. Judy the Beauty's come back at them as well. And Dance Card on the outside. But it's Proofy Doll. Proofy Doll, Dance Card, Judy the Beauty going to hit it together. Proofy Doll along the inside. Proofy Doll, Judy the Beauty. Proofy Doll in a thriller. Groupie Doll beats Judy the Beauty. Dance Card was third. Summer Applause running on late to be in a photo with Sweet Lulu for fourth.
Mike Pena, Jude Feld, that's Baron and Pontiff, back with you here on the Equine Forum on HRRN, broadcasting from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios right here in the heart of the bluegrass. A bit of a chilly Saturday morning. Maybe that race clip and the call from Trevor Denman of the 2013 Philly and Mare Sprint will warm you up a little bit. Groupie Doll sizzled the victory that day after winning the race the year before as well. She was so, so good in her career. It was a career that saw Groupie Doll win 12 of 23 starts. She earned more than $2.6 million for her trainer, Buff Bradley, who is kind enough to be with us now. And for good reason, Groupie Doll, after being retired, was purchased by Mandy Pope, Whisper Hill Farm, and then bred to Tappet and produced a colt by the name of Tappability, who is going to the post Saturday afternoon, race three at the fairgrounds, making his debut. And Buff, that has to be a very special thing for you to be able to saddle the very first foal from your brilliant champion, Groupie Doll.
Yeah, it really is, Mike. When we sold her, I always wanted to be able to train her babies, but when we sold her, I obviously didn't know what would become of that. Here I am training her first baby, and it's very exciting and very grateful for Mandy sending us this colt.
this has been such an emotional journey for you on a lot of levels. I can remember my wife, Michelle, and I standing with you at Keeneland when Groupie Doll actually sold and Mandy Pope, you know, decided, hey, I'm going to be the one to purchase her. And it was kind of a combination of sadness and elation on your part. And, you know, now fast forward all these years later, and here's the son of Groupie Doll set to go to the post. Pretty cool the way this game works.
Yeah, it really is. You know, when she was born, I remember telling my wife, Kim, as soon as we pulled her out of her dam, I said, this is a nice big filly. I said, we're going to keep this one. I said, we'll keep this one for breeding later on, and because we like the line so well. And, of course, that didn't happen. But having to sell her, knowing that we would not be able to breed her the way she needed to be bred, of course, to a horse like Tappet. But to have that come back and be able to have this guy with us here in this barn, it's pretty special. The whole, like you said, the whole story is pretty special. And that day, you know, selling her something that, you know, you don't want to do, but you know you have to do, and feel like that it's, you know, you got to keep going in this game, and got three kids, go to college, and watch after them. So, and a farm to keep moving forward. So that was a big decision maker right there.
Well, you mentioned being bred to Tappet. Was that the only stallion they could find for Groupie Doll?
Yeah. So far, that's all that they've bred her to.
I guess they've done okay. Super Sire Tappet, and hopefully Tappability
right.
Lives up to the hype here later today.
Right.
When you found out that they were going to breed her to Tappet and stuff, have you been following him all along, or did you know when did you figure out that you were going to get the horse? When did they tell you?
Actually, not till about probably about a month before I got him. You know, and didn't know really where he was in his training. I knew that he had been broken and that he was in training at Goldmark Farm, but that's all I knew. And, you know, I'd had a few horses for Mandy anyhow at the time. I've got a few other horses in the barn. So, obviously, when she told me, I was very excited. And, you know, he's been fun to have in the barn. Just knowing that we've got the blood in the barn has been pretty exciting. And now that, you know, nobody said too much about him until the entries came out on the overnight. And then when they found out that he's running, we've gotten a lot of phone calls and stuff. People just really excited about watching him run.
I'll ask you the obvious question, Buff. Any similar personality traits that you've noticed with Tappability and Groupie Doll?
Yeah, you know, I've been asked that question a lot. And I think he's got a lot of Tappet in him because he's kind of cultish acting and pretty aggressive. I will say that in the last few months, he's really kind of gotten his mind on the racing part of it. So I've seen that coming around with him. I'd say probably his biggest thing is that I can find a similarity would be that, you know, he likes to chase those horses and run them down. And he's not super fast out of the gate. And we've taken him out of the gate several times. And it just does not break as sharp. But, you know, I mean, I think he could get a little bit better on that. But he sure, when he sees the horse in front of him, he's set his sights on the horse in front of him.
You're not really noted for being a first-time starter trainer. You're very old school. One of the reasons I love you so much and think you do a magnificent job with horses, you're not really interested in getting them cranked up. I mean that sincerely. I think you do it the right way. Is there any notion in your head that he may win first time out, or do you feel like, you know, he's going to need a couple before he finds his best stride?
Well, I've talked to his pilot, James Graham, about that as well. And, he'll probably would need it. We want to see a big effort from him tomorrow. Good trip out, you know, getting out of the gate and then running at him and seeing him run a bit at the end. I think he is going to be a horse that's going to be better even you know, I think Groupie Doll got better as she got older. And one of her best races was her last race as a six-year-old. So not forget that at Gulfstream Park and with Mandy Pope colors on. I think he's mentally he's getting there. So I think that while I expect him to handle everything well for the race, I think that, you know, he may take a little more learning. So I'm not I haven't seen that flash of brilliance where he's just going to jump out of there and go and, you know, run off with it or anything. But we've seen enough ability out of him that I think he's going to be a nice little racehorse.
Talking with trainer Buff Bradley here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. A very busy Saturday coming up for Buff. He has several horses in. We'll talk more about some of those in a minute. But now talking about Tapability, the first foal from champion Groupie Doll, who was trained by Buff, and Tapability, a son of Tappet, making his three-year-old debut, his career debut, in the third race at the fairgrounds on Saturday afternoon. Buff, since this is his career debut, and he did not start as a two-year-old, let's cut to the chase. Can Tapability overcome the Apollo curse on the first Saturday in May?
Well, I guess we'll be bucking to try to do that, won't we?
You know, that always amazes me, right? Here we are January 12th. Now, if a horse started on December 31st, we're saying, okay, he doesn't have to worry about the Apollo curse. But 12 days later, we're saying, oh, yeah, he has no chance to win the Derby because of the Apollo curse. Is that ridiculous, or is it really something to look at?
I think it's ridiculous. I think it's just that most horses have started by this time, and so you've got a bigger pool to get from. So, I don't ever look at that, but I hear that sometimes from owners. Hey, you know, we got to get this horse started in December. So, and I say, well, what, for maiden 15? Or
that'll do it. That'll get him started.
Get him going. Yeah.
Well, you know who's worried about it is Baffert. He's got Axeman, who broke his maiden on January 1st. That's the worst thing that can happen. And coincidentally, I've got him 13 on my Derby list. So he's got more curses on him than he needs.
Buff, you know, you joined us a few weeks back, maybe about 5 or 6 weeks ago, and we talked about another horse that you're going to saddle on Saturday afternoon. That's the Player. And we spent a lot of time talking about his personality traits, and he's a horse with a ton of personality. He's a 5-year-old son of Street Hero. You're going to send him out in the Louisiana Stakes Saturday afternoon at the fairgrounds. That's race number 10. He's 3-1 on the morning line. What can you tell us about the Player?
Well, he's done very well down here at the fairgrounds and feel like that he's ready to go. I mean, he's been on it. Calvin's been on him for all of his works, and he said he's right. I mean, Calvin's very confident and happy with him and the way he's going into this race. Like you said, I guess he would tell us if there was something wrong because he's a pretty cool horse and cool horse to be around.
As a trainer, what do you do with a horse like this, who's a veteran horse coming off of a layoff? What are the things you're doing over the past few weeks to make sure he's ready to fire his best shot when you bring him back?
Well, he's fit, and one thing we've done with him is kind of let him just make sure that he stays happy and he's happy with what he's doing and feeling good, and we want to see that energy level up on him, and I think that's right where he is right now, and we've tried to just do a little less with him in the last week and get him a little bit more on his toes and feel like that he has. I mean, he works fast, but he's a fast horse. We haven't really had to ask him to work fast. And I think that's sometimes fast horses, if you don't let them work fast, then they don't get enough out of their works. But we feel like that he's got to have his last two works. We feel like he's gotten enough that he's done the work in his breezes, and we can come back with a little less of the gallops, not galloping him as strong in the mornings. But, yeah, he seems ready to go.
Buff Bradley joining us from the fairgrounds here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. After the Louisiana Stakes, you'll turn your attention to another maiden race on that program, Buff, and you're going to saddle a horse by the name of Ours Truly. And when you look at the pedigree, this is a half-brother to the player, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's, I'll tell you what, he ran pretty well his first time out. He didn't break very well and came finishing to finish sixth and gave us something to look forward to. And we knew that he needed to stretch out a bit anyhow, but he's been training really forwardly for this race. So I'm looking for a big effort from him. No, he didn't get a big number in his first race, but I think that, you know, I think he'll move forward.
Does he like to lay down in the stall and take his naps too?
No, he doesn't have those. He doesn't have the same personality, but he has a great personality, and he's probably one of the prettiest horses in the barn. He just really goes out there and he shows a lot of class.
Now, Buff Bradley always shows a lot of class too, and very nice to join us here on the Equine Forum this morning. Buff, really do appreciate it, my friend. Enjoy this very special day. Good luck with all your horses, and go get it done.
All right. Thank you all so much.
All right. And Buff, like all of our guests who appear on the program, will indeed receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Don't forget that you can embrace your passion and wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. Had a lot of people tell us that they have gone to the Embrace the Race website and purchased gifts for a horse racing fan on their list. And it's great to see because they are the perfect, perfect gift and a classy gift to give to that person on your list that loves the sport.
Yeah, it's beautiful merchandise. They do a great job, and you know, you got to love that stuff. It's something you're proud to give people.
Yeah,
definitely.
What a day it could be for Buff, huh?
Yeah, it could be a killer.
Massive.
As we were talking, I could just see, you know, sometimes you have those horses that even though you don't think they're super precocious or whatever, but that they have that blood in them that just makes them runners. You know, you could see them like break slowly out of the gate and loop the field and win. Right.
Yep.
That would be super cool. The player, I mean, he's the horse to beat in there, I think.
Yeah.
He's favorably weighted and, you know, he looks good. And then the other horse, Buff's right. His first race wasn't too bad. He was 48-1. He closed to split the field, and, you know, he can move forward off of that, so it could be a really good day.
So he has the first foal by Champion Groupie Dow that he'll saddle. He has the half to the player that he'll saddle, both of those going in maiden special weights. Does a trainer, as a former trainer, Jude, I'll ask you this question, but does a trainer have an advantage when they train a horse and they know the family of that horse?
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of times it gives you an insight. Because whenever you get a young horse, Daryl Vienna taught me this, whenever you get a young horse, you formulate an idea about the horse. Could be a good idea, could be a bad idea.
Yep.
But you formulate an idea based on their pedigree, their conformation, you know, what you know about their siblings. And so it guides you in your training. Now, you might find out that what you first thought about a horse was totally wrong, or you might be spot on. But when you have members of the family and you see these traits as you're training the horse, you know, it helps you adjust a little bit quicker. Mm-hmm. And I think that can give you a bit of an edge.
Yeah, interesting. We'll see if Buff has the edge later today at the fairgrounds. We're gonna get to one final break. We'll come back and wrap this one up for you. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Castleton Lions, home to multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti and blue-blooded sprinter Justin Phillip, who was recently represented by his first stakes winner at Belmont Park.
Down to the line, what a catch takes the Rockville Center over Morning Breeze.
That game stakes victory by What a Catch comes on the heels of Justin Phillips' daughter, Upset Brewing, putting in a strong runner-up finish in the $100,000 debutante at Churchill Downs. And while Justin Phillips continues his fast start, seven-time Grade 1 winner Gio Ponti continues to prove his offspring can run on any surface at any distance.
And Sir Dudley Diggs from Amiz Gizmo. Sir Dudley Diggs has won the Queen's Plate.
Dre Fong pulls clear of Masochistic. Mind Your Biscuits finishing with a flourish, but Dre Fong's the leader. Dre Fong has won.
Gio Ponti and Justin Phillips,
standing at Castleton Lions. Visit CastletonLions.com.
Jimmy John's World's Greatest Gourmet Sandwich is Ed speaking.
Yes, I need a sandwich delivery right away.
What kind of sandwich?
I don't care. Just get it to 215 Elm Street right now.
I'm on my way!
Jimmy John's.
Thanks for getting here so fast.
You're welcome, sir. Here's your sandwich. By the way, did you know your house is on fire?
That's why I called Jimmy John's.
Fire makes you hungry?
No, I knew you'd get here fast. Grab a bucket.
We're going to need more than two guys, sir.
You're right. What'll we do?
Leave it to me, sir.
Hello?
Hello, boss? Send everyone you got to 215 Elm.
Okay.
Doesn't matter what kind of sandwich, sir. I'll explain later.
Right.
Thank you, sir.
Jimmy John's. Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know...
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you...
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Fire department.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your...
It's okay, Captain. We got it handled. Care for a sandwich?
Thanks, but tell me something.
Shoot.
Why didn't you call the fire department first?
I did.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
Power.
And Tapazar, a sterling performance today. Tapazar and Corey Nakatani take the dirt mile.
Passion.
And it's American pastime in a very, very impressive effort today.
Performance.
But they're way far behind Monomoy Girl. Sharp in victory was she by five under the wire.
Gainesway Stallion Tapazar is Tappet's leading miler, displaying brilliant speed throughout his career, breaking his maiden by 10.5 lengths as a two-year-old, wiring the Grade 3 Sham Stakes by 4.5 lengths at three, and running away with the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile by 2.25 lengths at four. Among the leading second-crop sires of 2017, Tapazar has stamped his early progeny with his same quality and speed. From the family of Tappa's champion filly, Untappable, and the sire of 50 winners, 2 stakes winners, 2 graded stakes horses, and more than $3 million in progeny earnings. Tapazar, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
This is Joe Rocco Jr.
I'm John Velasquez.
My name is Victor Espinosa.
This is jockey Brian Hernandez, and you're listening to HRRN.
Well, Ashford Stallion American Pharoah made headlines at the November breeding stock sales this past year, and it was no different at the recently completed Keeneland January sale, and that might be an understatement. Offspring of the Triple Crown champion accounted for the highest-priced short yearling on both day one and day two of the sale. At the opening session, prominent owners Alex and Joanne Lieblong secured a colt from Crestwood Stud for $400,000, but the star of the show was hip number 533, who sold for a cool $1 million to MV Magner of Coolmore Stud on day two. He was the highest-priced short yearling of the sale and the third-highest-priced colt in January sale history. A half-brother to the brilliant Grade 1 winner Caravaggio, who is entering his first year at Stud at Coolmore's Irish base this year. And as American Pharoah enters his third breeding season at Coolmore's Ashford Stud in Versailles, the market has sent a clear signal that they expect big things to come when the first Pharoah babies hit the track in 2019, and that's certainly going to be exciting. A couple minutes left here to wrap this one up for you. Busy show. I want to thank our guest, Joe Christofek, for being with us in the first half of the program, talking about the big day at the fairgrounds. I want to thank the big A, Anthony Stabile from ExpressBet Radio, and our call-in show and weekend stakes preview show. He was with us at 9 o'clock Eastern to talk about the racing in New York, and Buff Bradley joining us just a few minutes ago. Jude, people have until 30 minutes prior to post for today's Grade 2 Fort Lauderdale Stakes. That's right about 4:30 Eastern to enter their selections for our Road to the Florida Derby Challenge and a chance to win a trip for two to this year's Florida Derby. They can do that horseracingradio.net in the Grade 2 Fort Lauderdale, the designated race. We touched on it in the first half of the program. Looks like a really, really good race and should be a great contest race today.
Yeah, it should be. A lot of people entered last week and look forward to them re-entering and take a shot. Why not? It's a great prize.
Yeah. We're 2 weeks away from kicking off our 2018 broadcast season. We'll head to Gulfstream Park for the Pegasus World Cup on January 27th. We'll have that exclusive coverage for you. That also begins our Saturdays at Gulfstream broadcast series, and we take you from the Pegasus through the Florida Derby at the end of March. Every single Saturday, we'll bring you exclusive radio coverage of the biggest stakes races, including races like the Holy Bull and the Fountain of Youth, and then that Florida Derby. So
Make sure you're tuned in and you join us every single Saturday. And you can see a complete schedule on our website, horseracingradio.net. And I know nobody wants to get to South Florida more than the Pontiff of the Pick Four.
No, there's no question. Hey, I'm ready to go.
Real quick, you said you did a Pope Jude sheet for today. People can get it at popejude.com. What right. tracks did you focus on?
Did Fairgrounds, Gulfstream, and Santa Anita.
All right.
So, selected races from there, and good racing. Looking forward to a nice Saturday in front of the TV watching horses.
Yeah, great racing all over the country, and make sure you're locked in later today. And check us out on social media, at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Been a fun couple of hours. Our thanks to Chauncey, Sean C., for handling social media. Our producer, Lee Della Pina, here in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studio. For Jude Feld, I'm Mike Pena. Hey, you know what? High of 18 degrees in Pittsburgh on Sunday. Jags are going to love that. Go Steelers.
Good night, Barbados. It's 84.